I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 28th of October. Mondays at 1 means all things political, and Ken Rutan is our guest this hour. For many years, political editor for National Public Radio, where he was involved with political news on many, many NPR programs. We're happy to say that Political Junkie is back. Ken has just launched this, and it's being distributed on the Public Radio Exchange. He's also launched his own Political Junkie website, KenRutanPolitics.com, which includes his weekly Junkie column, daily blog posts, his on-air station appearance schedule, and the return of the Scuttle Button Puzzle. What will we talk about this hour? All kinds of things. Computer problems with the Affordable Care Act, the fallout from the government shutdown. He wrote a blog recently asking, how will John Boehner respond to the next crisis, which of course will be funding the government and raising the debt limit. He looks at the future of Cory Booker, who was now in the U.S. Senate or elected to the Senate, and we'll be talking about other issues with Ken as well. All hour, you are welcome to join our conversation. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we love to have you leave messages there as well. Hello, Ken. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Kathleen.
Political Junkie is back. Ken, okay.
America can breathe easily now.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so happy. You must be delighted.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. It's basically we're doing a weekly podcast and show that member stations are picking up. And, of course, it'll be, you know, if you hated the Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation and hated the It's All Politics podcast with Ron Elving, then you'll definitely hate this one. But we're having so much fun with it. And, of course, the column is back, the button puzzle is back.
Wonderful.
I'm very excited.
Oh, and I am too. Congratulations. And the website is KenRutanPolitics.com, right?
Yes, that's it.
Wonderful. Well, you've been very, very busy. I know you're being heard on stations all over the country as well, so let's jump right in. And I guess the biggest news of the past few days, and you've written about it extensively, you wonder why this wasn't ready to go when it was supposed to be ready to go, but these computer problems with the Affordable Care Act are just causing all of those who weren't in favor of this program to begin with a chance to blast the program again. Will it be up and running at the end of November?
Well, that's what the White House says, and it very well may be. And, of course, if it is up and running, that may be the end of the glitch problem. But it's just remarkable, as you say, that, you know, Congress passed this. The president signed it 3 years ago. The Supreme Court gave its okay to it. And whatever the American people think about it, maybe the 2012 presidential results ratified it. But the point is, the president still needed to go out and sell this thing. It is still not getting majority approval with the people. And then when the website had its problems, and of course in the beginning it was just considered a glitch, well, it's much more than a glitch. I mean, it may even question people's faith in whether government works at all, but it was the wrong thing, the worst time for the president, because here he is on the ascendancy after the Republican shutdown, after the, you know, congressional shutdown, and he had the wind at his back.
Right.
He may not have that now.
Yeah. Well, it is amazing. This is, after all, I'm not real computer savvy, but surely a lot of people in the country are, and you would have thought with a major program like this, they would have had it tested and tested and tested and have it ready to go. There are a lot of great computer minds.
Well, not only that, the government, the administration said it was ready. I think as recently as September 10th, their computer people, who were, by the way, not the same people who are working on my website, I should tell you that right now, but the people said, look, everything will be fine. We're ready for the launch on October 1st. And again, I kind of think that there would have been a greater outcry in the country had it not been for the Republicans, who brought the attention on themselves with a shutdown that was so completely unpopular and so completely a disaster for
right.
them at the polls.
Yeah. Do you have any idea? Every now and then I'll hear a news report and then they will mention briefly Kentucky. And Kentucky seems to be the state where everything is working just swimmingly. Do you know why?
Well, there are several states. I mean, Minnesota has it, too. I know Kentucky has it with Governor Steve Beshear. But Kentucky has its own. I think it's called KYNECT. So I don't know if it's KeyNECT or KYNECT, as in connect. But they have its own. I mean, not everybody not everybody has signed up in Kentucky. The enrollment is still far less than people were hoping, but it's working. It seems like people are satisfied with it. And all the problems, you know, of course, you know, comparing one state to the entire country is not a fair comparison, but at least everything seems to be working, at least computer-wise. And Beshear, Governor Beshear, who cannot run for another term, but Beshear seems to be getting a good political windfall out of this because it seems to be working so well.
Yeah. You wrote recently that there may be signs that Democratic unity is starting to wither over the Obamacare glitches, and you mentioned specifically Senator Joe Manchin.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, it was interesting. First of all, when the Republicans gambled and shut down the Congress, they were trying to force the Democrats' hand to say, well, you know, maybe we're not for maybe we should delay Obamacare, you know, the Affordable Care Act. Maybe we should defund it. But every Republican in the House and the Senate stood the ground. They stayed united with Nancy Pelosi in the House, Harry Reid in the Senate, and there was not one dissenting Democratic voice. Whereas, of course, on the Republican side, you heard them just bash each other every day between the so-called establishment wing and the Tea Party wing. But now, in the aftermath of the shutdown, now that the government's up and running, you have people like Joe Manchin say, look, this is really not working. We need at least a one-year delay of the individual mandate. We see a sign with 10 senators have called for, like, extending the enrollment period to the end of March instead of the middle of February. Gene Shaheen and a lot of the vulnerable Democrats who were up in 2014 have complained over and over again, this is embarrassing, it's unacceptable, and it's not working. And where, you know, we always like to point fingers. Remember President Bush with FEMA and Katrina, you know, you did a great job, Brownie. You're doing a hell of a job, Brownie. Well, nobody's saying to Kathleen Sebelius you're doing a hell of a job, but the Democrats are very nervous that if this lasts, now, again, it could go away as of November 30th, but if this lasts, it just could have repercussions for 2014.
Yeah. Is there any chance, do you think, I know there are hearings this weekend, is her job on the line or not?
Well, ostensibly, yes. And, of course, you know, everybody likes to point fingers and get the blame. And we always hear about administrations who just love to throw people under the bus. And that's true about Democrats and Republicans. The problem with getting rid of Kathleen Sebelius is that President Obama, I think, owes her, or at least they have a very good relationship when he was running for the presidency for the first time in 2008 against Hillary Clinton. Kathleen Sebelius, then the governor of Kansas, was a big Obama supporter. So I think the president knows that and has not forgotten that. But having said that, well, of course, you know, if you have Republicans going on and on and on saying that Sebelius' head should roll and she should get fired, well, maybe that'll stiffen President Obama's back and say, there's no way I'm getting rid of her. But again, having said that, if all this disappears, if everything is fine after November 30th, when the White House promises that the website will be up and running better, maybe the pressure will be off her. But of course, there are other questions, other concerns about so-called Obamacare, about costs and how it affects small businesses. So this may be an ongoing debate.
Right. Well, let's talk about the government shutdown, which seems like ages ago right now. What's the fallout, the continuing fallout, particularly for the Republicans, from that shutdown? Is it over, the fallout, or not?
Well, no, not at all. I mean, right now, I mean, if you look at every poll that's come out while the government was in the middle of the shutdown, and since then, Republicans are record lows. The latest polls that show the people who want a generic Democratic control of Congress is by like 9 points, and that's a lot. So in other words, they would automatically vote for Democrats for Congress 9 points over the Republicans. Now, of course, in the safe Republican districts, the ones that have been, you know, drawn, so they'll you know, have no problem getting reelected, that may not be a problem. But many of the so-called marginal or swing districts, a lot of Republicans are just, you know, getting nervous because they feel that, you know, the American people may take out their ire of what happened with the shutdown next November. But look, November is a long time, and of course we have a long time from now, and we have more crises coming up because we still have a January deadline for funding the government again. We still have a February deadline for debt ceiling crisis. I mean, everything we went through on October 1st can very well repeat itself next year. The only difference, of course, is that some of the grown-ups in the Republican Party, the Mitch McConnells, and yes, even John Boehner, say we are not going to pull that stunt again. We are not shutting down the government, but something has to do, something has to be changed regarding government spending.
Well, you've asked the question. You have to wonder how it is that John Boehner will respond to those next crises that you just outlined. Do we have any indication how he will respond?
Well, it seems like, I mean, you know, even though the Republicans really did get their head handed to them, they just basically got nothing out of the 16-day shutdown other than keeping the sequester in place, which, of course, is no mean feat. I mean, you know, the fact is that government funding of programs with the sequester in order in place. So the Republicans do have that. But a lot of the Tea Party folks said Boehner had our backs. He supported us. He stood with us, you know, all the way. He let us have our votes. And we have new respect for him. Now, of course, that could change on a dime. People like Ted Cruz, of course, he's a guy from Texas in the Senate. Ted Cruz is still saying, I'm going to do everything I can to shut down the Affordable Care Act, and hasn't ruled out a filibuster or whatever. But again, those tactics really turned off the American people. It may fire up the Tea Party base, but ultimately, if the name of the game is keeping control of the House and possibly winning control of the Senate next year, the Republicans have got to do some new tactics.
Right. The other big story over the past couple of days, of course, is all the European leaders that the NSA appears to be spying on, tapping into their phones. What are they looking for, and what do they think they would just get away with this?
Well, you know, what's remarkable about this is that, first of all, this is President Obama has been in office for 5 years, and either he's just learning about it, which is pretty remarkable, or he's just telling our allies, you know, Britain and France and Spain. I think there are 35 world leaders who the NSA is alleged to be spying on. Now, some in the government are saying, well, this is really about terrorism and national security issues, and it's not about, you know, little personal gossip. But nobody wants to be seen as a pawn of the United States, and certainly the allies who have stood, you know, back. And I just remember during the Bush administration, when the end of the Bush administration was coming and President Obama was coming into office, they said, phew, finally, you know, a breath of fresh air, new respect for our allies. And this is really, I mean, I can't think of anything that the Bush administration did that is just as incendiary as the spying on these leaders.
So what's it all about? Are people just incredibly fearful that there will be another major attack and that changed everything?
Well, I mean, you know, it seemed like the way of the world and the way of government. Look, I mean, people have been spying on each other and on allies for years. Israel has spied on us. We've spied on Israel. We've spied on Britain. I mean, that's been around. But the extent that, I guess, the Snowden leaks have shown that there's no difference between friend and foe and everything goes and. It just really, the whole new world dynamic is changing, and I think probably not for the betterment of U.S. foreign relations.
We haven't seemed to be able to talk about anything except government shutdown, whether or not we'll default. It's just all we've talked about. What happened with immigration legislation, and what are the prospects for any kind of legislation? We were talking about that about 4 months ago.
Well, we're still talking about it because President Obama convened a bunch of Latino leaders and groups that support easing their path to citizenship for the 11 million people who are here illegally. A lot of people said after the 2012 presidential election that, okay, there's got to be some kind of immigration overhaul because the Republican Party cannot stand to just, you know, lose 70-75% of the Hispanic vote to the Democrats over and over again. They've got to change their philosophy. Just as we said after Newtown, Connecticut, oh my goodness, we've got to overhaul the gun laws because this just can't keep happening. And we expected something about guns and that didn't happen. We expected something about immigration and that hasn't happened. And now we're left with about 18 or 19 days left of legislative work days. The thought of saying legislative and work days in the same sentence is kind of unusual. But anyway, given what Congress does. But, I mean, for the rest of the year, so it's hard to imagine anything getting done. And plus the fact a lot of Republicans are in no mood to deal. They feel they were dismissed and dissed by President Obama and the Democrats. They got nothing out of the agreement to end the shutdown. Not that they may should have, whether they should have or not is another thing, but they really got nothing out of it. And I think they want nothing. They don't just trust. They don't trust the president, and they're in such a foul mood. If President Obama could have been more magnanimous, and I'm not saying he should have been, because again, I think the shutdown was the Republicans' responsibility. But if Obama had been more magnanimous and talked more about finding a way to have agreement with Republicans, they may have been more in the mood to talk about immigration. But right now, the mood is really, really ugly, and they're in no mood to talk. Plus the fact, and this is all one sentence, that the House Republicans are in no mood to deal with the Senate Republicans because they feel that they sold them down the river during the shutdown.
Right. And speaking of guns, I don't know if you saw that Slate piece this morning. 9,833 gun-related deaths in the U.S. since Newtown. Isn't that incredible?
Well, I think the word incredible is used for the fact that nothing is getting done. I mean, again, you know, if you have one here, one there, and unfortunately a lot of these are just, you know, barely reported gun
right.
deaths, but
yeah.
they're all over the place. And you need like an Aurora, Colorado, or a Newtown, Connecticut, to put the issue before the American people and say, oh my goodness, this is unacceptable. But even with these terrible tragedies, still nothing gets done, and the parties don't seem to be any closer to, I mean, even just the registration, the background checks, which seem to be the least intrusive of all the measures being proposed. The NRA said, absolutely not. And so nothing is getting done. But both immigration and guns, you think that, boy, if there was anything that was definitely going to be done by this Congress, it would have been that. But it doesn't look like it's happening.
Ken Rudin is our guest for all things political. Political Junkie, Ken Rudin, and that is back, Political Junkie. It's being made available to stations through PRX. He also has a new website now for all of you, and everybody who's listening right now is a Political Junkie. He has a website as well, which is KenRudinPolitics.com. It includes his weekly Political Junkie column, also blog posts, and his on-air appearances around the country. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk@WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. I want to let you know that tomorrow we're going to spend the whole first hour of the show on the Affordable Care Act and the problems people are encountering. So let's reserve most of our comments on that for tomorrow, although you certainly can talk about the effect that it may be having on the president politically. What do you think is the continuing fallout from the government shutdown? Do you think that we're going to see exactly the same repeat of what we went through January 15 to fund the government and February 7? Do you have any hopes that we're going to be able to pass any other kind of legislation on other issues? We'd love to hear from you. A couple phone lines are open, 800-486-8655. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up this afternoon on Central Time, Veronica Rickard and Rob Ferret discuss a new Wisconsin bike safety law, and they'll explore funeral rights in America. That's Central Time from 3 until 6. Phone calls now for Ken Rudin, 800-486-8655 is the number. If you get frustrated because you can't get through, please use our email, talk@WPR.org. Ray in Milwaukee is our first caller. Hi, Ray.
Yes, I heard something floated on the radio a few nights back about a way the Republicans could easily defeat the health care plan just by investing, let's say, $100 million, maybe $200 million into this project. They would go online and offer young people between the ages of 18 and 32, whatever is that very important group that they need to get to sign up, they would offer to pay their fine for this first year of, you know, $95 or whatever it is. Well, they threw out $100. They would offer to young people to agree not to sign up this year, and that's all it would take for the collapse of this. And they have spent 20 times that amount on the recent elections. One person, Adelson or whatever his name, who helped, I think, Newt Gingrich, he has more than enough money to throw at this little project. So they could actually defeat it just by using money. And I wonder, Has Mr. Obama recently reread George Orwell's classic, 1984?
Ken.
Well, I mean, clearly, I mean, Ray is exactly right in the sense that if young people do not sign up for this, it's going to, I mean, the idea is that it's going to be cheaper for young people, for the system, for the whole Obamacare, if young people do sign up, because they're the ones who are healthier and will live longer, and it won't be cost, it won't cost as much. But I have not heard anywhere the thought of opponents paying people not to sign up. I mean, that sounds like the ultimate Democratic, you know, we just heard about War of the Worlds and the paranoia that's going on. That sounds a little far-fetched to me. But the point is, I don't think they have to do that, because given the fact that what this website glitch, which is not even glitches anymore, but the glitch problem, it just seems to erode people's faith in government. So a lot of people have spent, I mean, countless number of people have spent hours and hours trying to get into the system and just been unable to do it. They see a blank screen, they get bounced back to the first page, and they get frustrated and they give up. So I don't really think that the opponents of the ACA need to pay anybody, because the government is doing their dirty work by themselves. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Ray. Dave in Illinois. Hi.
Yeah, good afternoon. I was just wondering, I know Mr. Obama and how he went through the ranks being a Chicago politician. I wish everybody would have known that. But anyway, what Republicans were involved in the quote-unquote non-essential things that they decided to shut down? Because I don't remember any Republicans. I thought it was Mr. Obama and his administration that made sure that World War II vets couldn't go to an open-air museum, and that park rangers made sure that people couldn't stop on the side of the road to take pictures of Mount Rushmore. So which Republicans were involved in making sure to make it as painful to the people as possible?
Well, you know, I've seen a lot of those reports and the rallies and the complaints. To me, this is really misguided. And, I'm not carrying any water for the Obama administration. I'm really not. I never have. But to me, the Republican Party, their allies in the Congress, decided that if we're not going to defund or delay Obamacare for a year, we're going to shut down the government. And so they shut down the government. The fact that World War II veterans, museums and parks have been closed, it's not Obama that's keeping it closed. It was the fact that there was no funding for the government and there was nobody to take care of it. So I saw a lot of Republican members of Congress saying this is Obama's, despicable for President Obama to keep the parks closed, to keep the veterans' memorials closed. But the fact is that Republicans demanded the delay of Obamacare. The Democrats would not give in, would not acquiesce in any way, and so the government shut down. And that's really all it is. It wasn't that Obama kept the museums and the monuments closed. It was just that the government was shut down.
Yeah. But obviously, Sarah Palin and Ted Cruz and some of the other Republicans' appearance at the World War II memorial with some of those veterans convinced some people that it was the Democrats' fault.
Well, look, the fact is, I mean, look, I think, again, as I made it clear, I do think it was the Republicans' responsibility and fault for the government shutdown. But in fairness, and to be concise here, exact here, there were Republicans such as Susan Collins, the senator from Maine, who days before the crisis ended came up with a very good, or at least seemingly good, compromise, and she had a bunch of Democrats ostensibly on board with her, but then Harry Reid got wind of it, and Harry Reid said, look, I don't want any compromise. I want total capitulation by the Republicans. I want no compromise. And so the Democrats who were looking at Susan Collins' proposal with kindness, they said, well, we're really not for it, and they backed away. And so that left Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell to do the final deal, where Harry Reid got everything he wanted.
Yeah, but wouldn't the Democrats really be blamed by everybody in their party if they had capitulated at all? And what was their signature piece of legislation on the Affordable Care Act?
That's exactly it. That's why this was ill-fated from the beginning. The thought that President Obama would delay or defund or agree to delay or defund his signature domestic policy program, something that he promised he would have when he was campaigning for president, for the Democrats have been talking about for a half a century, the fact that he would agree to this to keep the government open was just nonsensical to begin with, and many Republicans knew it. If you listen to John McCain, and I know John McCain is being so portrayed as a sellout and a traitor and a rhino and all that stuff, but there are a lot of people like John McCain and you know, Senators Rob Portman and others around the country who said that, look, this is a mistake from the beginning. There's no way we're going to win, and we should have, you know, demanded different things, like, you know, cutting the device tax in Obamacare, which is, you know, a part of the plan, or it seemed to rein in some of the entitlements with Social Security and Medicare, but to base it on the Affordable Care Act that President Obama was never going to acquiesce to was a wrong policy and a defeated policy from day one.
Carol in Green Bay, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I would like to state to him, I have worked for the government, and I know how they operate as far as the computers being not operable. First of all, they use the cheapest methods that they can find, and the competency of a lot of the workers are not really there. Like you and I would have somebody very competent, and when they do make a mistake like they have, which is a big mistake, they will move them into a better position with more pay.
Oh, I'm not sure that's going to happen this go around. Do you, Ken?
No, that's what's so remarkable about it. I mean, whatever you think about it, look, they were asked over and over and over again, the administration, are you ready for this? Are you ready for this launch? And while they were distracted by the talks about a shutdown, they said over and over through September, we are completely confident everything is going to work completely fine starting October 1st, and it didn't. And again, if we weren't so focused on the Republicans and the shutdown, I think the American people would have said, my goodness, I can't believe this is – we waited 3 years in the making.
Right.
But 3 years we've been told this would be a great progress, a program, and it's just not working. So there's really a great deal of humiliation and anger and frustration in the White House.
Thanks, Carol, for the call. Bill in Marshfield, hi.
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 Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay. I just want to ask Ken, and I really enjoy your program, and I've always enjoyed Ken's comments. I just want to ask him if there's any chance that that the Republicans in the mainstream would ask the Tea Party to leave the main Republican caucus and be a third party.
Hmm. Oh, boy, that would be the end of the Republican Party, that's for sure. You know, that's a good question, interesting question, because the only reason John Boehner is Speaker of the House is because of the Tea Party fervor in 2009 and 2010. And in 2010, the Republicans picked up 63 seats in the House, which is an amazing victory for the Republicans, and that's why John Boehner is Speaker. But for more often than not, the Tea Party has done a lot of – I mean, if anybody's been rolling their eyes and hurt by the Tea Party, it's Republicans. They threaten primary challenges constantly of Republicans who may not be – I mean, right now, Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, Lamar Alexander, Thad Cochran, all these senators, probably more – they're all being faced with primary challenges by people further to the right. Mitch McConnell has made it clear from day one that his goal is to make was to make Obama a one-term president. A lot of these Republicans have done nothing more than express the opposition to Obamacare, express opposition to the Obama domestic program. But to some in the Tea Party, to many in the Tea Party, that's not conservative enough. They're not aggressive enough. So, you know, you could say that they're so frustrated we could tell the Tea Party to leave, but then you know, that's, I mean, not that anybody remembers, including me, what happened to President William Howard Taft in 1912, but, you know, the split in the Republican Party with Teddy Roosevelt is what elected Woodrow Wilson in 1912. And I think the Tea Party to have a third party, not that the Republicans are going to win the White House anytime soon anyway. It doesn't look like that, especially given the Latino vote and the demographics changing in the country. But a split Republican Party between a moderate wing and a conservative wing is the worst thing for any kind of Republican resurgence. Although, you know, we keep talking about the lessons learned from 2012, and everybody said, okay, now we'll know better. We'll learn from our mistakes. But it sure doesn't look like it, and 2016 may not be much better.
Well, you understand the breakdown of the country better than anybody. Give me an understanding of this. What we've heard is that the country has been redrawn such that those who are in conservative districts really don't have to worry about it. So when we're talking about a potential switch from Republican to Democratic hands in the House, are we talking about swing districts? And I guess I was led to believe that there were very few of those in the country right now.
Well, look at the – there were 87 Republicans who voted to reopen the government. There were 144 that voted to keep it closed. Many of the 87 who voted to reopen the government were in districts won by President Obama. A lot of them are in Pennsylvania. A lot of them are in suburban, moderate states, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Michigan, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are a lot of, you know, I mean, redistricting has been a fact of political life for forever, and that's not a new thing. But a lot of the Republicans are safe. They don't have to worry about compromise or anything like that because they will be easily reelected. But, again, they will, you know, it depends on who gets elected governor in 2018. And if it's a Democratic governor in 2020, the lines will be drawn the Democratic way. It's, you know, whoever holds the power, draw the lines. And so it's true in Wisconsin and Ohio and Florida, Republicans run everything, Texas. But look at Illinois. Democrats run everything in Illinois, and Democrats drew the districts in Illinois in 2012, and a lot of Republicans got killed.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, yes, the Republicans will probably retain the majority of the House through 2020. But then, you know, demographics are changing. Political fortunes may change. They, you know, it's very possible that unassailable majority could disappear by 2020.
Hmm. Ken Rudin is our guest for All Things Political. Our phone number for you to join this conversation is 800-486-8655. Rick in Sheboygan, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Rick.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
Oh, yes, ma'am. I wanted to know if Ken had heard that the Kentucky sign-ups for people are really not for the Obamacare plan, but more into Medicare or Medicaid. Now, I don't know which is the appropriate thing they would have been signing up for, but my listening to the radio was that that it's Medicare or Medicaid that's drawn most of the Kentucky people.
You know, Rick is actually right. No, absolutely. What's going on in Kentucky is not the Affordable Care Act. It is Kentucky's own extension, really, of the Medicaid program, and a lot of the only problem with it is that a lot of people are not signing up for it, a lot of politicians, Democratic politicians, because Obamacare is so unpopular in Kentucky, because the president himself is so unpopular in Kentucky, they don't have the political support that they'd like. But having said that, Governor Beshear, who we talked about before, who is a Democrat, who is a strong Obama supporter, is pushing his own state-run Medicaid program, and that seems to be popular with those who have participated. But Rick is exactly right. This is not the Obama program that's going on in Kentucky.
Huh. Thanks, Rick, for the call. We'll take more in just a moment. Ken Rudin is our guest this hour. He's back with Political Junkie, which is terrific. He launched also just recently his own Political Junkie website, and he is our guest for All Things Political this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We've been talking a lot about the Affordable Care Act and the computer glitches, which couldn't have come at a worse time for the president. We're talking about the fallout from the government shutdown. Is anybody concerned about the NSA? I'm amazed that so many people say, well, that's the world we're living in, and that's just what we have to do. But there are a lot of German leaders and French leaders and others who are darned upset that we're tapping into their phone calls. What's going on? Is that okay, considering the times that we live in? Do you hope that Congress will be able to accomplish something when it comes to immigration reform or something? Do you worry about another possible default and another government shutdown in January when we have to go through this all again? We certainly welcome your phone calls. 800-486-8655 is the number. Talk at WPR.org. Always leave messages for us on our Facebook page. This also happens to be Rhonda Fanning's last week. She unfortunately is sick today, or I'd talk to her, but you can leave messages for her and wish her well as she moves to Texas later on. We're going to miss her. All right, more phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ken Rudin is here now. Ken, we have a question from Don in Door County. When do you think the U.S. and other nuclear nations are going to come together and insist that a consortium of the best and brightest scientists attempt to control the leak at Fukushima?
Wow. You know, you always think that you're prepared for everything.
I know.
I don't know. I just...
Well, do you want to take on global warming? Why doesn't somebody do anything about global warming?
Well, why can't we do anything about Rhonda Fanning? I mean, that's the real
question.
I mean, seriously, if Texas becomes its own country because they're threatening to secede and Rhonda Fanning goes to KUT in Austin, then she won't be an American citizen and she can't be president. I don't know. It's a long story. I'm sorry to avoid Don's question. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. But do take on global warming. There's another issue that the president talked about a little bit in his latest acceptance speech, and that we have so many scientists on this show who talk about this, and it looks as though attention must be paid, and it's not being paid. So why can't we do any big things in this session of Congress or in this country on issues like that?
Well, I don't know if, I mean, without being specific about this issue, but I don't know if anything, I mean, it sounds very upsetting and sad to view things this way, but I don't see anything getting done. First of all, we always say, well, you know, it's an election year, but it seems like it's always an election year, and that's why nothing gets done.
Yeah.
If you think, go back to immigration for 1 second, Marco Rubio, once upon a time, was with the Gang of Seven, who was putting together this immigration overhaul that Republicans could back. And since then, he has been pilloried at every Tea Party rally and conference. He's persona non grata with many conservatives. And now, when you ask Marco Rubio about immigration, he doesn't say a word. Like he's just been cowed down, you know, beaten down by the conservative opposition. So if Marco Rubio, who was going to be the pathway himself to changing the immigration laws, if he's backed down, I don't know how anything else gets done. And so you have all these issues that are standing in front of us that President Obama has talked about, and he had a litany of a tremendous amount during his inauguration address, which of course sounds great, but then ultimately, see, the problem I think, and I'm switching, my mind is going all over the place with this, but. The problem with Obama is that unlike Bill Clinton, who said, and even Ronald Reagan, of course, who said, look, you know, I may not get everything I want, but I'll get something out of it, and I'll give something to get something. Obama, to me, just seems to be, you know, he's very professorial, he's very smart, he knows what he wants, he gives a speech, and then he almost disappears. He's almost like, okay, I'll let you guys handle it. And sometimes you got to roll up your sleeves and get your hands dirty and fight for something. Now, in fairness, I think there are some Republicans or many Republicans who will say no to whatever the president suggests. And I think it's why bother, you know, having lunch with the Republicans if they're not going to say yes to anything. But at the same time, and maybe he was just burnt in his first term, but it just seemed like Clinton always had this willingness, Reagan always had this willingness to talk to the other side, and Obama, maybe he was burnt in the first term, but he just seems like, okay, here's what I want, here's my speech. You guys work it out among yourselves.
Yeah. Well, and then who suffers for all of this is people are just downright demoralized. You know that. You do talk shows all over the country. People are out of jobs. The economy has picked up a little bit, but there's still very high unemployment. People have to work three jobs. Nobody has any faith at all in Congress, not much faith in the government. And then you present this scenario that things aren't going to get any better. It's downright discouraging.
And you're absolutely right. It is the American people and not the partisans, because the partisans, the true blue Republicans will always be Republicans. The true blue Democrats will always be Democrats. But think of what happened in this country. In 2004, the country voted for George W. Bush for a second term because they believed in what he had to say. With disgust in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and Katrina and the food prices and the gasoline prices and all that, they said, this is not working. In 2006, they put the Democrats in charge of the House and the Senate with Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. 2008, they elected Barack Obama. Big Democratic years. And then by 2009, they say, well, this is not working again. I'm going to switch to the Republicans. So in 2010, you saw record numbers of Republicans getting elected to office. I think the vast majority of this country is just desperate for something to work. And if they thought Bush wasn't working in 2006, they'll vote Democrat. If they think the Democrats weren't working in 2010, they'll vote Republican. But neither party seems to satisfy what needs to be done. And, of course, that leads to the obvious question, then why isn't there a third party? And we could talk about forever why that is not working, but that doesn't seem to be any time on the horizon soon either.
Ken Rudin is our guest. It's All Things Political. You always hear Mondays at 1 o'clock here on the Ideas Network. And we're delighted to have Ken, who graced the microphone Mondays on Talk of the Nation, Wednesdays on Talk of the Nation. And so we're doing the time frame that he used to be on regularly. But we're happy to tell you that the Political Junkie is back, which is terrific. And also he has launched his own Political Junkie website. So write all of this down. The program is being distributed on Public Radio Exchange. And then his website is KenRudinPolitics.com, which will include a weekly junkie column, daily blog posts, and also you can get his appearance schedule on various public radio stations all over the USA. Here's our phone number for you to join the conversation. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. Ken has said a couple times on this program that if the health care exchange, if Obamacare is up and running by the end of November, then it'll be a cause or a problem that's just sort of gone away. Do you think it has political ramifications for the president? Does somebody need to take the blame for this? Some have suggested that, and she's going to face some tough questioning later this week in Congress, that Health and Human Services head Kathleen Sebelius should take the blame, and maybe there has to be a fall person for it, and maybe she will be that person. What do you make of this? It's like week after week, we talk about how nothing gets done and how demoralized we are, and our faith in our government is at an all-time low. So how do we break through all of that? We have yet to talk about Cory Booker, I have to remind myself, because that was a significant election, and he may have a big future in American politics. We'll talk about that with Ken. Kenneth in Janesville is our next caller. Hi.
Hello. I still would like to talk about the immortal young. Now, if they show up at the emergency room half dead without insurance, are they going to have the option of buying insurance or die? And what about the illegal immigrants that are not covered by the Affordable Health Care Act? Does anything change for them?
Well, I mean, as far as we do know that the president has given, you know, first of all, January 1st is when the program is supposed to start. You know, there are a lot of changes in the healthcare rules. Like, for example, if you have pre-existing conditions, that won't disqualify you from coverage and things like that. But you do have to sign up. There's talk that the White House may agree to some Democratic proposals that you could delay the sign up until March 31st without penalty. But everybody has to sign up. So, I mean, if you don't sign up, you get a penalty. You pay a penalty. Now, I don't. You know, if you show up without insurance and you show up at the hospital, I don't think anything changes with that. But the real thing is that, you know, we talk about, well, if the web system is up and running, everything will be fine. But by most accounts, by many accounts, it looks like the people who are very happy with the insurance they have now, the coverage they have now, maybe first of all have fewer choices than they had in the past. They may have to pay much more. For those who are poor and can't afford it, I think this is exactly what the country needs. There are so many millions of people who are uninsured, and this will help them for low-cost insurance. But for many people who have more money, who are very happy with their system they have now, they may be paying much more. The small businesses may be paying much more. So, you know, there's so many things we don't know that's going to happen, and I think that's why there's so much reticence about signing up for it, because of the uncertainty. And that's why this computer glitch is so unnerving for them, because the uncertainty is there to begin with. It's been uncertain for 3 years, and to add to people's confusion and uncertainty, I mean, if you ask people what they do or what it will accomplish, most people don't know, despite the fact that the president has been pushing it for 3 years.
We need to talk about Cory Booker for a moment. Isn't it something there have only been 4 African Americans elected to the Senate since Reconstruction?
I know, and it's scary that you can name them so quickly. Ed Brooke of Massachusetts, Carol Moseley Braun of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
That other guy from Illinois.
What was his name?
Barack Obama.
There you go.
And Cory Booker. And, you know, it's interesting. Cory Booker, I mean, he has 1.6 million Twitter followers. I mean, he's a real celebrity. Like, he's smart, and he's energetic, and he's photogenic, but he didn't really campaign on much. Of course, you don't have, if you're a Democrat running for the Senate in New Jersey, you don't have to campaign on much because the last Republican elected in New Jersey for the Senate was 1972 when you were just still in diapers. But I mean, but for the most part, Cory Booker has a charmed life. And so already they're talking about him on the ticket, perhaps as early as 2016. On the Political Junkie podcast from last week, I talked to a reporter from the Newark Star-Ledger who said that apparently, Cory Booker is seriously already discussing a presidential run in 2020.
I mean, really?
Yeah, I mean, apparently this, you know, look, you know, there are some people who stay in the Senate for a gazillion years and then decide to run for president, and there are people like Barack Obama who was really only in the Senate for 15 minutes when he ran in 2008. So maybe Cory Booker could do it, but right now he can do no wrong. Everybody seems to love him. He's very, very smart. And he has an opportunity to be one of, you know, you think of Joe Biden, who's going to be 73 years old in 2016. Hillary Clinton will be 69 years old. These are not spring chickens, but the Cory Bookers of the world, the Martin O'Malley, you know, the governor of Maryland, there's a lot of new blood in the Democratic Party. And maybe we'll just, you know, let 2016 get out of the way. We'll have Hillary Clinton and maybe Joe Biden running. But after that, a lot of young Democrats who are eager to you know, follow in their footsteps.
Mm-hmm. Al in northern Wisconsin. Hey, hi, Al.
Hi, great. It's great to hear you again, Ken. I watched Moyers and Company this weekend, and they talked about a lot of things. They talked about hopelessness, and then they talked about from the bottom up grassroots movements that are starting to work. As far as organizing the airport in Seattle, because they can't move the airport in Seattle to China, so they have to pay these people $15 an hour. And then all these universities that are divesting themselves of energy stocks. And what the point was, it's from the bottom up. And the second part is, he mentioned that there's 2 tea parties. There's the 0.01%, and it's a couple of guys that have all the money. And they're the evil ones. And then there's a second Tea Party, which are misguided people that think that they're doing some sort of good by trying to overthrow the government. I'll hang up and listen to you now.
Thanks, Al.
Well, I think there's another definition of the Tea Party, and I think there are people who don't want to overthrow the government. They just feel that it's not working, and it's just the government has gotten too big, too bloated, too out of control, and too expensive, and we can't sustain it. And I think that was the feeling in 2009 when the president was talking about this gigantic health care plan, and it scared a lot of people, and perhaps talk radio helped scare people.
Sure.
But I don't really blame. I mean, a lot of these people, they're not anarchists, they're not traitors, you know, they're not looking to overthrow the government. They just don't like the way things have been going. Regarding the first point about grassroots, Al, I think you make a very good point. Well, not so much grassroots, but when things are getting done in this country, when you think of same-sex marriage or things on taxes or things on immigration or voting laws, it seems like state legislatures are the way to go and where things are getting done. Forget about Congress. You know, you think about all these guys who, like Cory Booker, wow, he's elected to the Senate. Now what does he do? I mean, what is he going to do in the Senate? Because nothing seems to get done in the Senate or the House, but a lot of it seems to be done locally, perhaps, you know, with City Hall, but mostly in state legislatures. And there are a lot of examples, but even when there's big partisan splits in the state legislatures, they still seem to come to some kind of agreement and a cooperation. not everywhere, of course. There's still a lot of partisanship. But if you want to look to the future of political action in this country, I suspect you should give up on Washington and spend more time watching the state legislatures.
We're out of time. Thanks, Ken Rudin. Join us again soon. All the best. Ken Rudin, our guest, Political Junkie, is back, being launched by Public Radio Exchange. Also, he has a new website, KenRudinPolitics.com. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and KP Whaley for producing this program, and thanks for all of your calls. We have many more messages about the Affordable Care Act. I will hold on to those tomorrow during this hour. We'll take on that topic.